Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Wednesday, November 7, 2018. A South Sudanese Peace Committee meets in Juba.
We are expected to deliberate on a number of issues, one of which is the establishment of a technical secretariat for the NPTC. The other is also to see the different committees that are established by the agreement as to whether they are operational or not.
And a UN official visiting South Sudan calls for the protection of children.
A peace agreement in its revitalized form is an opportunity to turn the corner and to move forward when it comes to really and truly protecting the interests of the children of South Sudan.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. A committee tasked with the oversight of implementing activities during the transitional period in South Sudan met in Juba today. The head of the SPLM-IO delegation to the committee says the team is 2 months behind schedule and the committee should speed up its activities to catch up with deadlines stipulated in the September 12 peace deal. Dimo Silva Aurelio reports for VOA from Juba.
According to the revitalized peace agreement, the National Pre-Transitional Committee, which is composed of members of the warring parties, must coordinate and supervise implementing the peace deal during the 8 months pre-transitional period. Speaking in Arabic, Committee Chairman Tut Gadluak says the panel is taking its first step today. Gadluak says they will review all the technical committees to make things move, and that they will form others quickly to make sure that all the committee to implement the peace agreement are in place in the best time possible. The committee held its first meeting in Khartoum last month. Port Kang Chol, the head of the SPLM-IO delegation to the committee, says convening this first meeting of the National Pre-Transitional Committee, or NPTC, in Juba is key to implementing the agreement.
We are expected to deliberate on a number of issues, one of which is the establishment of a technical secretariat for the NPTC. The other is also to see the different committees that are established by the agreement as to whether they are operational or not. And if they are not, how do we help strengthen and operationalize them?
Regional and international envoys attending today's meeting say the panel is building trust among the warring parties. Ambassador Gamal El-Sheikh Ahmad, Sudan's newly appointed envoy for peace in South Sudan, says convening today's meeting shows the warring parties are getting down to business.
Convening this meeting in Juba also is very important for building trust and also for building the security arrangements that are conducive for the parties to participate in those meetings and different mechanisms in Juba. So we are very encouraged.
Alison Blackburn, the representative of the U.S., Britain and Norway, known as the Troika at the meeting, called for inclusivity in the committee and other bodies to be formed in establishing a new government.
We would strongly encourage you to be as inclusive as possible and for all the members of the committee to make the necessary compromises so that the agreement can work and bring the peace that the people of South Sudan so desperately need. But we would also particularly ask you to ensure that there is full representation of women in this implementation of the peace agreement, because that has been agreed as part of the agreement and is fundamental to the sustainable peace in South Sudan.
Tesfaye Negasa is the IGAD envoy to South Sudan, who attended today's meeting.
As IGAD, we believe the success of NPTC will be measured by our ability to generate political will among parties to conflict in order to sustain amicable peace in the country. We believe NPTC will draw on a full range of instruments to achieve peace, sustainability in a reasonable time frame, and build on diversified portfolio to deter relapse conflict.
President Salva Kiir appointed the 10-member National Pre-Transitional Committee in September in accordance with the revitalized peace agreement. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
Violence against children is a major health problem throughout the world that can lead to AIDS. Globally, 260,000 adolescents aged 15 to 19 were newly infected with HIV in 2016. Those between 10 and 19 accounted for more than 12% of the new infections in Zimbabwe. As VOA's Ade Kondo reports, President Donald Trump's emergency plan for AIDS relief, known as PEPFAR, worked with Zimbabwe's Ministry of Health and Child Care to conduct a survey aimed at helping young people at risk of HIV and child violence.
The study involved 30,000 females and 3,525 males in six parts of the country. It found that one of the factors predisposing adolescents to HIV infection are traditional and cultural practices of early child marriages. 5% of the females surveyed had ever been married or lived with someone as if married. Zimbabwe National Council for the Welfare of Children, ZNCWC, child activist Maxim Marungweni speaks on the issue.
The recent results of the Young Adult Survey really reflected the high vulnerability of children to HIV infection, as according to the states, it showed that 23% of the young adults had cohabitated before they turned 18. But our children are engaging in high-risky behavior, especially because of lack of information on sexual reproductive health rights. This is a worrisome trend, so there is need for adequate, comprehensive sexual reproductive health rights with our children so that they are well informed of the consequences of what engaging in high-risky behavior.
Parliament is yet to sign a bill outlawing child marriage. Some observers say that, along with traditional practices, is exacerbating the plight of adolescents in the fight against HIV. The PEPFAR study reveals that 15% of the female respondents actually married to a husband with multiple wives, with 2.7% in arranged marriage. Maud Ngwe, a mother of two, sees tradition as high-risk behavior among adolescents, which can lead to HIV incidents.
African culture and tradition is also a factor in the reason why adolescents engage into early sex activities, because in the African culture, if we're open with them and we talk to them about sex and we tell them about the consequences of having early sexual relations, I believe that parents, the community, can work together to actually reduce early sexual activities by adolescents. As much as citizens have got the right to their own religious and cultural practices, but when it comes to children, when it comes to child marriages, which is a form of abuse, a form of violence, psychologically, government, I think, should come in and have come up with certain policies that will guide religious sects or certain cultures that are involved in child marriage.
Predisposal factors to HIV infection for children include sexual, physical, and economic violence. For instance, 16.9% of the adolescents surveyed were pressured or forced into sexual intercourse for the first time. Additionally, 4.5% of the females and 3.5% of the males between 16 and 24 tested positive for HIV. The National AIDS Council provincial manager, Sinatra Nyati, sees legal challenges in mitigating against the incidence and prevalence of HIV amongst adolescents.
We have over 3,000 children living with HIV that are taking their drugs at Impilo. We realize that these young people, even if they are indulging in sex, they are not comfortable using prevention. So it becomes difficult for us to program for them. And according to Zimbabwean law, they are minors, and we are not supposed to program for a minor. A minor should be rehabilitated to their family. And then the challenge that we are facing now is if the minor is into sex work, how do we help?
Observers say cultural and legal obstacles must be removed to contain the incidence and prevalence of HIV/AIDS amongst adolescents. Reporting for VOA, this is Ade Kondo.
Still on child issues, a UN Security Council official visiting South Sudan is calling on the Kiir administration to enact laws to protect children in South Sudan. The Swedish ambassador to the United Nations is leading a Security Council working group on children and armed conflict. Wake Simon Wudu has the story for VOA from Juba.
Ambassador Cook and his team met with the first Vice President Tabande Ndiaye, Chief of Defense Forces General Gabriel Jokriak, and the Inspector General of the South Sudan National Police Service, General Majak Akech Malok, along with the other officials on the issue of protecting South Sudanese children.
The impunity for violations against children have been and continues to be a problem, we believe. So we've discussed also how accountability can be improved.
Skook says the government should enact a law criminalizing sex abuses the United Nations identified as constituting grave violations against the children, the killing and maiming of children, recruitment into armed conflict, rape and abduction, the use of schools and hospitals for military operations, and the blockade of humanitarian access. Skok says all the warring parties involved in South Sudan's five-year conflict have abused children and must be held accountable.
Many of these violations need to be part of the criminal law, penal law. And in that case, the justice system should penalize and criminalize and put to justice any violator of crimes committed.
Skok also called on the army, police and wildlife officials to observe such laws and advised the government to employ competent prosecutors in both the civilian and military realms to investigate and prosecute serious conflict-related cases involving the abuse of children. And Skok reiterated the need to establish a hybrid court to try perpetrators of war-related crimes, which the UN and the African Union both support. He says warring parties must stop recruiting children into their forces and release child soldiers per the requirements of the peace agreement. Virginia Gamba, the UN Special Representative of the Secretary General for Children and Armed Conflict, made similar recommendations after visiting South Sudan a month ago. Gamba reported that nearly 1,400 children have been verified as having been directly affected by South Sudan's warring parties. Armed groups have said they are committed to demobilizing child soldiers. Some 900 child soldiers were released by government and rebel groups this year after rallies staged by rights groups. But Skok says more must be done.
I believe that the peace agreement in its revitalized form is an opportunity to turn the corner and to move forward when it comes to really and truly protecting the interests of the children of South Sudan.
According to Gamba, the conflict has caused immense suffering to children. In her report, Gamba said at least 1,221 children were recruited by both government and rebel forces into armed conflict in 2017 alone. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, South Sudanese refugees in northern Uganda learn how to become self-reliant. Find out how when we come back after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
is it important for you to follow the news in other countries?
Of course, yes. It is important. That's how I get informed, actually. Because that's how I get informed and knowing what is going on around the world.
It's better to know what's going on in the world, what's going on in other countries, so that we be updated at times. Yes, it helps me to know what other countries are facing and how to help my country to develop the country, because there are some instances that happen in other countries that I can adapt here.
It's when you get to know how their current affairs is doing and how you can go about it different.
Very important, because I love the broad view of the whole international thing. If the elections are going on in the US, I'm so updated and detailed.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. Some South Sudanese refugees in Uganda's Pagirinya refugee settlement earn a living from their carpentry. Dozens of refugees who fled the conflict in South Sudan build furniture and then sell it to fellow refugees and Ugandans. One refugee says he earns enough to support his family of nine. Mungume Davis Rwakarinj visited the camp in northern Uganda's Adjumani district last month and has this report for VOA from Kampala.
71-year-old refugee Abirigwe David cuts wood at his makeshift workshop in Pagirinya refugee settlement. David makes tools, chairs, benches and cupboards. He started his carpentry business a couple of years ago with only 100,000 Uganda shillings, or about $25. Today, he earns about 20,000 shillings a week, the equivalent to about $6, enough to support his wife and their seven children. David says he always has clients.
When the furniture are produced, people really demand it. They buy it. So that the little money when they buy, also it will help my family. And then some also I will change it to get another raw materials for continuation to do the work.
David was once a refugee in Uganda during the Sudanese Civil War. After South Sudan gained its independence following the Comprehensive Peace Agreement in 2005, he returned home. As a first-time refugee in Uganda, David studied and became certified in carpentry at the Lila Technical Institute. Upon returning home, he was employed as an instructor at the institute in South Sudan's Lenya County, where he says he taught young South Sudanese how to become carpenters. A few meters away from David's workshop, refugee Saidi Maragantonio Kenyi works at a bigger carpenter shop owned by Ugandan. Speaking the local Madi language, the 60-year-old Kenyi says the money he earns building furniture helps him buy food and other necessities for his family. Kenyi says he buys things like beans and vegetables for his wife and his five children, along with shoes and primary and secondary school materials for his kids. He says this kind of work is very helpful to him and his family. He and his family fled fighting Lower Village in former Eastern Equatorial State in August 2016. Kenyi's apprentice is 23-year-old refugee Koma Sande Amoko. Amoko completed secondary school in South Sudan before fighting spread to his village, forcing him to flee to Uganda in 2016 as well. With no money to his name, Kenyi says he simply loitered around the Pagrinya settlement until he learned carpentry.
I started learning this thing last year in May. I can able to make a bed 4x6. That is medium and single. Even center table and even table in a set I can make.
Amoko says it feels good to be able to buy things like clothes without relying on his parents, who are refugees at the same camp and must depend on handouts from UN agencies to eat. Kenyi and Amoko are both paid on commission from beds, chairs, doors, and windows they make. The two men say once they earn enough money to buy more tools, they plan to teach other young and employed South Sudanese carpentry skills. NGOs also teach young people in the camp like Amoko other skills such as building and construction. For VOA News, I am Mugume, Davis Ruakarinji in Kampala, Uganda.
And now for some news on U.S. elections. Ilhan Omar, a Somali native running for a seat in the U.S. House of Representatives, won her race last night in the northern state of Minnesota. She spoke to our colleagues in the Somali service shortly after winning last night.
It's an exciting night. It's been a really amazing journey. We've had really great opportunities to have a conversation across the district to really talk about what direction we wanted to take our country. And tonight, throughout, not only in my race, but throughout the country, people are choosing hope over fear and unity over division. And it's a really exciting opportunity in a time when Somalis are on the Muslim ban, to be sending a Somali refugee to Congress, Minnesota is sending a clear message. And it's an exciting opportunity.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.
Alhamdulillah, alhamdulillah, alhamdulillah. Thank you all for being here with us. Thank you for welcoming us to Song and Dance. What an amazing journey this has been. I stand here before you tonight as your congresswoman-elect with many firsts behind my name. The first woman of color to represent our state in Congress. The first woman to wear a hijab to represent us in Congress. The first refugee ever elected to Congress. And one of the first Muslim women elected to Congress. A title I share with my beautiful sister from Michigan, Rashida Tlaib.
We love you, Ilhan!
Americans gave control of the House of Representatives to the Democratic Party for the first time in 8 years, but the Republicans strengthened their hold on the Senate. The Senate gains will make it easy to get approval for President Donald Trump's nominees for key appointments, including judges. But Democratic control of the House could mean challenges to Trump's agenda. Another winner last night is Joe Niguse, the first African-American elected to the Congress from the western state of Colorado. The Democrat is the son of immigrants from Eritrea. The election saw record numbers of women, people of color, and members of the lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender community elected to federal, state, and city officials across U.S. French President Emmanuel Macron was joined last night by Mali's President Ibrahim Aboubakar Keita in Rennes, France, to commemorate the hundreds of thousands of African troops who were brought to France to fight for their country in the World War I. This is the first time in the history a tribute has been made by any head of state to the African soldiers who were taken from then French colonies in Mali, Senegal, Tunisia, Algeria, and Morocco. Catherine Field covered the ceremony and spoke with Kim Louise about the significance of the event.
If you look at, for example, what happened in France, in eastern France, on that western front, some of these African soldiers who were known as Senegalese riflemen, they were really in the thick of some of the most brutal fighting that went on along there. 200,000 African soldiers were sent from France's colonies to Europe to fight for the Allies there. Some 30,000 died. Now, the ceremony which we had in eastern France on Tuesday night really was very symbolic because this is only monument to African troops who first served in that First World War. To have had the French president, Emmanuel Macron, and the Malian president, Keita, there attending that inauguration of that monument was incredibly symbolic. To have that gratitude being shown by France for these troops is very important. And also when you think about what the Malian president said, he said that 200,000 soldiers fought day and night, fought for France, and said that they fought for themselves as much as they fought for justice and liberty.
Why did it take so long for them to do this?
It really did take many generations, and I think we can specifically look at Emmanuel Macron, the French president, for taking the lead on this. He is the first French president who's been born in this post-empire, post-colonial era. And this is all part of what we're seeing from Emmanuel Macron, who's trying to address, if you like, the injustices of France's colonial rule. Let's not forget that he has traveled to various parts of Francophone Africa. And at one stage, he even talked about a crime against humanity that France had committed in these areas. But I think that he will need to go further because there is still a lot of resentment about some of the broken promises that the French had, particularly for these soldiers in World War I. They were promised military pensions, which they never received. They were promised passports, which they never received. 30,000 died and 200,000 of them came and many of them went home again. They have descendants and these descendants still want more.
That was reporter Catherine Field speaking with my colleague Kim Louise from Paris. Awel Lam from Minnesota is the newly crowned Miss South Sudan 2018. Lam has a message for South Sudanese in the diaspora to encourage young women to focus on education and their futures so they can become independent women who are able to take care of themselves and their families.
Right now, I want to use my platform to advocate for change within our communities here in the U.S. So I want to push unity and push peace. And the way that I could do that best is use my strengths, which is health education and health topics, to engage the community. So basically, just get more involved with our community members, bring them together, talk about South Sudan, talk about different health topics that do affect our South Sudanese people, and how we here in the U.S. can make a change within our communities at home and then our larger community back in Africa.
You know, well, the narrative of South Sudan sometimes is pretty negative. I'm wondering, you know, how are you planning to change that?
I feel like a lot of the positives in our community outweigh any type of negative that we have pushed out right now. So here in the U.S., there's a lot of like untold stories of women and men who work hard for our country and who are pushing peace. So I want to make their stories be the front line. And then the negatives will eventually die out, or there's always going to be negatives, but the negatives will be outweighed by the positives that is being displayed.
What would you say to people who might argue that Miss South Sudan is just a title, it's more ceremonial,
yeah,
and that it is limited in its ability to create change in our communities?
Most people that think that way is because of what they've seen in the past, and I do not knock them or say that they're wrong for that, because they've seen in the past people use the title as something that they carry without actually putting effort or doing things that they promised or actually getting involved in the community. But for me, I want to make it a new system, like a new way for women to get involved in our country's politics, in our country's social issues, and also be that representative for South Sudan. Be that role model for different little girls. Be that person in the community that can be a point of reference for them, and also a point of just that person that they can see and also get help from, too, if they ever needed it, that empowerment.
So what's next for you?
This coming Friday, I have Changemakers Ball with the American Refugee Committee. And from there, I'm going to speak to people that are already working in South Sudan and see how I can get more involved before. This is an organization that I've been working with in the past, so I want to see if I can actually do some outreach work with them here, partner with them, and then do outreach work in my own community and also in different communities in the Midwest. It's never too late for change. If Miss South Sudan has been something that people use to carry just for the name, or, you know, if South Sudan's history is bad, or if we dealt with tribalism, I feel like change can happen at any time. And I'm very hopeful for the future of my country and also for women in our country.
That was Awel Lam, Miss South Sudan Beauty Contest winner in Minnesota, speaking to my colleague Ayen Deng Bior. That's our show for this Wednesday. We now leave you with the song Man Shakil Badun.
Oh yeah, Rabona. Asma Salawatai. Mit mana inu. Salam al tajibulena de Kerejibulena Muria Irenas Alamul Hajat Batal Zaman Igeru Jibu Hajat Jedid Ashen Sudan Tana Jedite Ekumbe Hagiga Musulia Adandana Lino Huria Shukran Lena Tajabu Salam Lakin Salam. Sadu reis na salvatir, eh. Kuno bin man shakel badun. Rabuna tana uwa wahid wahid man shakel badun. Oyo, oyo, zuda bin man shakel badun. Wanina adu pele tana uwa wahid man shakel badun. Oyo, oyo, harita gebelia.
We've been listening to Russ Corby with the song Man Shakil Bado. I am John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for being here. Would like to know what you think about this show. Our email is southsudan@voanews.com. If you are planning to be out of Juba and cannot tune to us on an FM radio station, you can still listen to us on shortwave. Our frequency is 11850 kilohertz, 13865 kilohertz, and 15180 kilohertz. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Man,
kun jedid kan hajja kedima gayero salam fi sudan mabukun salam kan ma